As always, it came down to the wire. We'll take a closer look at what Democrats did in the final hours of the 2026 legislative session in Illinois and how it will impact all of us in the cities. The Democratic supermajorities used every minute of the 2026 legislative session as lawmakers tried to cobble together a $56 billion spending plan, while also dealing with a Chicago Bears stadium project, a digital tax on social media, questions about data center projects in the state, and more. Now, next week, we'll talk with a top Republican lawmaker to get the minority party's perspective on the session. But this week, we start with the Democrats, who are the majority in the House and the Senate, and who also have J.D. Pritzker as governor. Joining us from East Moline is Democratic State Representative Greg Johnson. Well, thank you for joining us. Let's talk about this budget. It's the largest budget in Illinois state history, 3,900 pages, $56 billion. Why did you support it?
I supported, first of all, I think it's a very responsible budget. I think it's a good budget. I think when we start looking at this budget, the first thing we have to look at is the fact that due to the actions that are being taken at the federal government level, we've been shorted anywhere from $8 to $10 billion in federal funding. So when you look at the fact that we went from, I think, over 53 to this $56 billion budget, I think the fact that we were able to get to the 56 to not impact everyday Illinoisans, the taxes that went into place were, some of them are going to be possibly future increases, but you know, unless you smoke cigars, you vape, cryptocurrency, I think there's a fantasy sports, gambling as well. I don't think that there was anything that really took place to really affect most people's everyday things. You know, obviously we don't like ever raising taxes on anything. But, you know, sometimes these are choices that people make. And, you know, the tariffs, the rate of inflation that have gone on at the federal level. I think we've done everything we could do to try to have a minimal impact on making people's lives harder.
Well, and you pointed out some of the $800 million in new taxes on social media companies, digital assets, as you said, fantasy sports, tobacco, sports betting, once again. These are some areas that you found $800 million in new taxes. You know that Republicans point out you're just adding tax upon tax.
Yeah, I also don't think it's fair, Jim, to say that those are not all of those taxes are unrealized. So the digital ad tax is something that's really been brought up over the last couple of years, and we've been very resistant, several members of our caucus, in implementing that because it's being challenged in a few other states. So, you know, I want you to remember that if people would, is that I worked in state government for many, many years. And I remember the $15 billion debt, the 12, 15 month backlog of bills. And I was never going to support anything that's real money. So the digital ad tax, if we believe that we're going to get that money, that revenue is going to be, there's a placeholder place for that, because I just was not willing to support that the last couple of years and then spend that money and then start out in a hole the next year. So, we will have to see what the revenue increase is, how much revenue this is really going to bring in for us.
One area that you're getting a kind of a windfall right now is the gas tax, because fuel costs more, of course, as you well know, so that you get a greater revenue stream. The budget freezes the 1.3 cent gas tax increase that was slated July 1st. It's pushed now to January. You know, an optimist will say that's really nice that you push it off. The Republicans point out that you're pushing it off till after the election.
Yeah, I would love to have supported it for the whole year. I wasn't in the room when that decision was made. I obviously would have no problem suspending it for the whole year. But, you know, I think it's kind of rich to hear Republicans make that claim when the reality is, at the same time, they're not railing against the actions of the Trump administration. The real reason gas prices are really such a strain on people's budgets is because of what the Trump administration has done over in Iran and his inability to get out of the situation that he got us into. So, you know, for Republicans to claim that, you know, the only gas taxes is what's really creating hardship for families, it's pretty rich, really is.
We were talking earlier, it was a 3,900-page budget bill once it was completed, and it's all 11th, if not 12th and a half hour negotiations. isn't there a better way to come up with a budget? I know every state, it's the last thing that's generally on the agenda is the budget, but it just seems to be that it all comes down to the last few minutes and then it's pushed through.
Yeah, so Jim, I'm not in leadership. I would love to not have to go until 5 a.m. to craft these budgets. I wish we could get more things done. You know, a lot of time though, you have your groups that are involved in budgeting. Springfield, Des Moines, Washington, D.C., you'll notice a lot of times we end up at these deadlines. And I don't think it's so much a lack of sense of urgency within the legislators. It's a collaborative process. And the nature of the business of advocates, lobbyists, and sometimes even of leadership is there's a procrastination that takes place. It happens even around people in our daily lives. Man, I would love to be out at the end of March and have everything done and everything go forward. But the reality is, you know, we have a process. We file legislation in January, then we pivot over to the budget in April. And a lot of people really don't even come to the table and have discussions until we get right to those deadlines. And it's for someone like me, it's very frustrating. But, you know, once again, I really don't want to hear Republicans complaining too much about that because, you know, it's always, we could have gotten out 3, 4, 5 hours earlier had they not also constantly went into caucus themselves in order to go over things. A lot of times they will call for caucus, just to call for caucus, to delay us another hour and a half so they can say, oh my God, we were here till 5 a.m. Well, if you hadn't called for a couple caucuses, we would have gotten out at 1 a.m. And as someone my age, good Lord, Jim, I'd love to get to bed before 5:30 a.m.
One of the other issues that was down to the wire, of course, is the new Bears Stadium, and no agreement was reached. It did pass the Senate after they made a number of changes, including a clause having basically what's called a sports stadium authority, which means that cities would have owned the stadium, and it would have been pretty much more for the Bears if they go to Chicago or to Arlington Heights that they wouldn't have to pay taxes. Now, it basically stalled. There's no special session expected. So basically, if you don't mind me using a metaphor, it's punted until November.
So, you know, Jim, when we talk about the Bears, yes, it's true. And I would have supported that measure had it come over. It allowed municipalities of over 70,000 populations in Cook County to own a stadium, to have a stadium authority and to negotiate. But that would have not have solved this problem. There still would have been the issue of whether or not the state was going to pick up the burden on infrastructure and you know, any conversation you're going to have. I'm not a big supporter of whether it's a TIF district or property tax. You know, I believe that these businesses need to pay taxes. So I don't know. I think it was a good faith effort to show the Bears that, look, there's not one legislator in Springfield that doesn't want the Chicago Bears to stay in Illinois. However, even with the mega projects bill, I voted no on the mega projects bill in April because we start to pivot over to financial situations in May. And I'm much more concerned about making sure that people have health care, that people are able to feed their families, and at the cost of living, housing, affordable housing. And I simply was not going to allow the Bears or anybody else really to jump to the front of the line ahead of these groups. So
do you think that the Hammond Bears are a reality? Because it sounds like the Bears really want to make a decision this spring, if not early this summer, and that's well before that a special session would be held.
Yeah, I don't know what the Bears' plans are. I'm going to be honest with you. I think the Bears have done a horrible, horrible job of messaging from the beginning on this. And I'm a legislator. I'm only one of 78. Do you know how many times the Bears and their organization has reached out to me on anything? It's between 0 and 0. I've had no conversations with the Bears or their lobbyists. So, I mean, I would think if you really want to get something done, you would be reaching out to legislators. And by the way, I'm not the only one that says that. Look, we want them to stay here. But I'm also got to make sure that it's a good deal for Illinois and a good deal for the 72nd district. You know, the mega projects, I just didn't see enough in there for to really benefit us. And I'm going to take a very skeptical eye towards anything that gives handouts to billionaires. I just, you know, it is when we see so many people hurting, not just in Illinois, but across the country, we see a lot of stadium deals or people regret those deals. And it does nothing but put people into poverty around the stadium. I'm not going to be able to support something like that, but I'm certainly willing to find a compromise there for sure.
Let's talk about education for a moment. The budget fully funds K through 12 education in Illinois. And also you passed a cell phone ban in schools, basically a bell-to-bell ban, as they call it, mirroring what some of the neighboring states of Illinois have already done. Was that kind of a no-brainer for you?
For me, it was a no-brainer. Not for my daughter. My daughter was a little upset at me for a couple of days. I will say my daughter goes to United Township. They do a good job already. I think, you know, our real intent here, first off, I do think cell phones are a distraction in the classroom. And I think we are giving school boards the ability to, it still has a lot of local control, but giving them the ability to make these decisions, to take these cell phones out of kids' hands. I think the irrational part of this, Jim, is that sometimes parents, even parents that are opposed to this, we've had this, sadly, school shootings for so many years, and people hear the goodbye calls and the things like that. And I think sometimes when you're talking about these things, you go to a kind of an irrational place. But the reality is, kids on their cell phones, being distracted while they're in the classrooms, it does interrupt the learning process.
And there's also stipulations in that bill that makes exceptions for medical issues or if the cell phones are actually being used in the classroom. So it's not like a total ban, but it's pretty much, like I said, a bell-to-bell ban in some ways.
Yeah, it's a better bill than it was a year ago. And that's really what we strive to do, right? Last year it was proposed. It didn't get through. And this year we brought it through. Legislation is about, someone has an idea, they file legislation. Everybody, all the stakeholders come to the table, you collaborate, and then you get to a place like this. And I think we got to the best place at the end. Much better place than we were a year ago.
And as you said, when it comes to the federal budget, Illinois is trying to prepare for a loss of federal funding. That's the Democratic mantra right now. And one of the things that was created is what's called the FRESH program, as you well know. Mm-hmm. Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger is what it stands for. And people who have lost or seen their SNAP benefits reduced would be eligible for a one-time $400 payment. This is about a $70 million program. And this is something you supported?
I did. And, you know, to be honest, you know, and I want to give credit to our leadership in the House and the Senate and the governor's office. Last year, we gave the governor $100 million into what we called a bridge fund. And it was in lieu of, we knew there were going to be some catastrophic results from what the Trump administration was doing. So food insecurity was one of the things we looked at. And setting aside that $100 million allowed this year now the governor to take $70 million of that and make sure that we had people that weren't losing their access to food, to the benefits, the FRESH program. It not only does the things you talk about, it also creates an avenue to help people get signed back up for the benefits so the lapse doesn't occur for them. I don't think anybody wants people, Republican or Democrat, wants families and children starving. So we were able to use a lot of that funding. Also, if you're looking, there's a lot of after school or funding programs even for food through our school districts here during the summer. We want to make sure our kids aren't starving, our families aren't starving. And we were very, we had the foresight to set that money aside a year ago.
Going from food to housing, Illinois homeowners can now opt into a payment plan option instead of losing their homes. As you well know, the state has been out of compliance, what is it, for the last three, maybe 4 years of a Supreme Court decision because the court said that local taxing bodies that were seizing properties where delinquent taxes were owed was simply unconstitutional. This is a new program, and do you think it's going to be an effective program that will still allow people who are delinquent in their taxes to not have their homes taken away from them?
I do. I really do. I think it's going to be very helpful. I think we're going to see it's going to help a lot of families, a lot of people. I think the biggest part, the hardest part I see of this, we got to make sure we message and let people know that advocates are out there, letting us out there, because a lot of times people get underwater and they just feel like it's over. But this is actually an opportunity. They get a second chance. Also looking at the program that allows them to access, you know, some of the equity before. There are certain things. Housing was something that members of our caucus were laser focused on. We want to keep people in their homes. I talked earlier about food security. I really, Jim, as I said at the top of this, I am proud of the work we did in Illinois. It's not a sexy budget. It's not a feminist budget, but I think we really, really looked at people who were at those most vulnerable places, and we figured out how we were going to protect them here in Illinois. And I think we've accomplished that.
I want to talk high tech for a second because the Power Act also passed. Did not pass. It would have reined in data centers. We're seeing a lot of states facing data center constructions, and they were so welcomed maybe 2-3 years ago, and now there's this real pushback against them. Are you happy with the way Illinois is dealing with the potential of new data centers coming to the state?
I'm happy with the fact that we're having a very deliberative conversation about this. You know, the data centers will tell you that they pay a very, very large portion of property taxes. Those on the other side will tell you that, however, it's not worth it because of the drain on resources that they bring. What really, the conversation at the end was the governor had a moratorium. You know, first off, we've got to define whether or not data centers are for different, you know, are good for your district or they're not. But at the end of the day, what it really boiled down to, Jim, was the question of no matter what we do here in Illinois, there's going to be project labor agreements that are going to be part of that. It does create jobs, but these are going to be union jobs. I will never, ever support data centers or any other project coming in to Illinois or in particular in our district that doesn't support those project labor agreements and support workers. We're not going to be bringing in fly-by-night operations, fly-by-night workers from out of state to come here and do substandard work on these communities. And this is a conversation that's going to be take place a whole lot more probably over the next year surrounding data centers.
Well, and on the other hand, the artificial intelligence bill overwhelmingly passed both houses and is heading to the governor, requiring third-party safety protocol studies and audits of big AI companies. A number of the AI companies also supported that.
Yeah, I think we all agreed that we needed guardrails in place. I remember last year we were talking about AI being used in mental health evaluations, and I'm like, we absolutely cannot have this. They're just AI. There are times it works. There are times it doesn't. And even the AI companies understand that you have to have the guardrails up there. They understand that. We understand that. We got to make sure our people are protected, but in particular, our children are protected, especially in these times when people are so really on tilt right now with everything going on in our world. Some days it feels like the world's on fire.
The issue of mental health is so important to you. And you're hoping that perhaps a new bill could, as you have told me, could be a game changer.
Yeah, it could be. I've been asking for appropriations for the Effective School Solutions Program. The unfortunate thing is we look at schools, even schools around here will have one counselor for 650 students. So last year I was able to get legislation passed that eliminated for 3 years the content test that was proven to be very burdensome, even for those with master's degrees, to get school social workers into our pipeline to serve as support for our school counselors. So we are seeing a change in that. We're getting more help there. And then on top of that, I introduced this Effective School Solutions into Rock Island and East Moline schools in Oswego. And then this year I went back and asked leadership for more funding so we expand that program even further, because I think we're gonna find by the time we're done, hopefully in the next 4 or 5 years, much like the parent mentor program, which I've championed for a number of years, that we're gonna see it profoundly change the environment of our schools and put our kids in the best position to succeed. If they don't have their mental health and their family, and they don't have their mental health support at home, obviously they're not gonna be able to succeed. And that's our job, to see if they live the best life possible.
Our thanks to Illinois Democratic State Representative Greg Johnson. Summertime is starting to go into full swing with a lot of great ideas for you, your friends, and your family. So here's a look at a few of the events you might consider, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off by watching K-pop Demon Hunters on the roof of the Last Picture House. Then head to the ballpark to see your Quad Cities River Bandits take on the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. Next, head to Niobe Zoo, because they are staying open late on the third Thursday of each month. Next, the Project of the Quad Cities and the Quad Cities River Bandits invite you to Pride Night at the ballpark. Finally, enjoy products that are homegrown and handmade at the QC Farmers Market in Rock Island. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Mo Carter has been busy performing on stages throughout the cities over the past few weeks. She says this time of year, patio gig season is her favorite. The self-styled charismatic troubadour visited us at Moline's Black Box Theater a few months ago to perform one of her originals. So here's Mo Carter with Hardware Store Man. Mo Carter with Hardware Store Man performed at the Black Box Theater in downtown Moline. And you can catch Mo Carter at Jimmy O's Saloon on Davenport's Telegraph Road. That's June 18th. And Wide River Winery in LeClaire on the 25th. We're celebrating America 250 with an ongoing initiative that looks at what some of our friends and neighbors have done, whether it be on the job or in their spare time. For the past year, we've asked people about their civic spark, why they contribute to the cities. So we posed that question to the head of the East Moline Main Street Association, Patricia Hansen. What is your civic spark?
I think as we're aging as a community, also for me, it's about what's my legacy? The first part of my career with East Moline Main Street, I was an unpaid volunteer. So I have a lot of volunteer hours, but it's for me, it's just a passion project. I'm learning grant writing. I'm meeting community members. I'm helping vendors get into brick and mortars. So for me, it's about just giving back and being able to look in the mirror at the end of the day and know you contributed something.
Our thanks to Patricia Hansen, president of the East Moline Main Street Association. By the way, East Moline will host its 68th annual 4th of July parade as part of its Independence Day weekend activities. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, plus streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us. We talk about the issues on the cities.